Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 585, Lyme Disease and Biological Warfare. This program is being recorded on February 11th of the year 2007. This is the second program that I've done on the subject of Lyme disease and biological warfare research. And in fact, side A was pretty much in its entirety a recap of information from For the Record 480 from October of 2004. What we looked at in a nutshell was the research done at Plum Island, a U.S. Agriculture Department facility that also doubles as an Army Biological Warfare Research Facility, and the research done there on not only using ticks as biological warfare disease vectors, but also the work done there, and in fact the role in founding Plum Island of Dr. Eric Traub, who was in charge of virological and bacteriological warfare research for the Third Reich in World War II, and then was brought over to the United States under the auspices of Project Paperclip, and did similar types of research at in the United States while traveling back and forth between the U.S. and Germany. There are indications that Dr. Traub may have been involved with the use of ticks as disease vectors on Plum Island and possibly elsewhere. And there is a possibility that the use of infected or, quote, poison, unquote, ticks may have led to Lyme disease, whether there was a deliberate test of Lyme disease as a biological warfare agent, or rather whether research was being done on it and it accidentally escaped. Plum Island had very, very poor security facilities, and in fact the security facilities there were really quite shocking, and the accidental escape of disease agents that they were researching would be altogether possible. Then again, there's the possibility that things may have been deliberately disseminated either as a test or perhaps by hostile foreign agents or by related fifth column agents in the United States. Who knows? But whatever the case, with regard to Lyme disease, there is a national security / intelligence / military component to Lyme disease research. As we're going to see in the paper that I'm about to read, there are a number of different divergent views about Lyme disease. One has it that the disease is hard to catch and easily cured. The other is that, in fact, it is not hard to catch, easily cured, and that it can cause serious chronic neurological damage. One of the things that we're going to look at in connection with Lyme disease also is that there's a lot of dispute about exactly which vague or contradictory information about just which ticks can disseminate the Lyme disease or related diseases, and also the Borrelia bacteria, which is basically what is responsible for Lyme disease, is a tick-borne type of bacteria that also causes a number of different diseases. So exactly which Borrelia organism causes Lyme disease, whether Lyme disease is just one particular disease, just what ticks spread the Borrelia disease, and whether Lyme disease is really hard to catch and easily cured, or whether in fact it is a very, very serious affliction. Well, these are some of the controversies about Lyme disease research. However, much of Lyme disease research is controlled by a national security-related entity called the EIS, the Epidemic Intelligence Service, and it is throughout the course of Lyme disease and research into it that we see elements of the EIS, the Epidemic Intelligence Service. There is a much less powerful and well-connected opposing camp called the ILADS, I-L-A-D-S camp, which opposes the notion, the official and government and national security supported notion, that Lyme disease is hard to catch, easy to cure, and rarely causes chronic and neurological damage. The government-backed camp is the STEER camp, that's S-T-E-E-R-E. The opposing camp is the ILADS camp. We're going to look at the numerous disputes about Lyme disease, but remember the EIS, the Epidemic Intelligence Service, and observe the extent to which biological warfare research or possible biological warfare application is to be found at every turn of the course of the investigation into Lyme disease, and in fact in the phenomenon of Lyme disease itself. This paper is by Elena Cook, C-O-O-K. Of course, it's called Lyme is a Biowarfare Issue, and in the introduction to this paper, Ms. Cook writes, "The world of Lyme disease medicine is split into two camps, the U.S. government-backed STEER camp, which maintains the disease is hard to catch, easily cured, and rarely causes chronic neurological damage, and the ILADS, or ILADS camp, which maintains the opposite. The STEER camp is intricately bound up with the American biowarfare establishment, as well as with giant insurance and other corporate interests with a stake in the issue. The ILADS doctors lack such connections, but are supported instead by tens of thousands of patients rallying behind them. Because the STEER camp has been massively funded and promoted by federal agencies, its view has dominated Lyme medicine not just in the U.S. but across much of the world. The result has been suffering on a grand scale. Below is a concise history of the military aspects of this cover-up." The next section is called Weapons of Mass Infection. "The development of biological weapons has never been confined to dictatorships or, quote, rogue, unquote, regimes. During the Second World War, America, Britain, and Canada collaborated closely on developing offensive bioweapons, and offensive research continued as an openly acknowledged activity of the U.S. scientific establishment during the Cold War. Only in 1972 was this work banned by international treaty. Meanwhile, the Maryland-based labs at Fort Detrick, for example, had produced millions of mosquitoes, ticks, and other vectors for the purpose of spreading lethal germs. The island of Greenard, off the coast of Scotland, was only declared habitable again in 1990, nearly 50 years after the British first contaminated it during anthrax experiments. Ticks, which vector Lyme disease, have been studied as biowarfare instruments for decades. Such well-known biowar agents as tularemia and Q fever are tick-borne. The Borrelia genus of bacteria, which encompasses the Borrelia burgdorferi species group to which Lyme disease is attributed, was studied by the infamous World War II Japanese Biowarfare Unit 731, who carried out horrific experiments on prisoners in Manchuria, including dissection of live human beings. Unit 731 also worked on a number of other tick-borne pathogens. After the war, the butchers of Unit 731 were shielded from prosecution by the U.S. authorities, who wanted their expertise for the Cold War. The U.S. government also protected and recruited German Nazi bioweaponeers under the aegis of the top-secret Operation Paperclip. Borreliosis, or infection with microbes belonging to the Borrelia genus, had been dreaded during the Second World War as a cause of the often fatal disease relapsing fever. The new post-war era of penicillin meant that many bacterial infections could now be easily cured. However, Borrelia, again parenthetically, that is the family of bacteria to which the organisms that cause Lyme disease belong. However, Borrelia were known for their ability to adopt different forms under conditions of stress, such as exposure to antibiotics. Shedding their outer wall, which is the target of penicillin and related drugs, they could ward off attack and continue to exist in the body. Lyme disease is not usually fatal, and it is sometimes argued that with rapidly lethal agents like smallpox and plague available, an army would have no interest in it. However, what is important to understand here is that incapacitating or non-lethal bioweapons are a major part of biowarfare research and development and have been for decades. For example, during the Second World War, brucellosis, chronically disabling but not usually fatal, was a major preoccupation. Military strategists understand that disabling an enemy's soldiers can sometimes cause more damage than killing them, as large amounts of resources are then tied up in caring for the casualties. An efficient incapacitating weapon dispersed over a civilian population could destroy a country's economy and infrastructure without firing a shot. People would either be too sick to work or too busy to look after those who were. The EIS, the next section is entitled, the EIS, the Epidemic Intelligence Service, and the, quote, discovery, unquote, of Lyme. And Ms. Cook goes on, Modern Lyme history begins in 1975 when a mother in the town of Old Lyme, Connecticut reported the outbreak of a strange multi-system disease. The town lies directly opposite the Plum Island Biowarfare Research Lab where, according to former justice official John Loftus, Nazi scientists brought to the U.S. after World War II may have test-dropped, quote, poison ticks, unquote. It should be noted that Loftus's reputation for gathering accurate, hard-hitting information is strong. Strong enough to bring down in disgrace the former Chancellor of Austria and Secretary General of the UN, Kurt Waldheim, after the latter's wartime record was revealed. While it's not yet known if Plum Island experimented on Lyme causing Borrelia, the lab's directors openly admitted to Michael Carroll, author of a recently published book which is endorsed by two former state governors, that they kept, quote, tick colonies, unquote. The hard tick, Ablioma americanum, known as a known carrier of Borrelia burgdorferi, was one of the subjects of the island's experiments. This tick is not the one most commonly associated with transmitting Borrelia burgdorferi, but it is implicated in harboring Borrelia lone stari, believed to be the cause of a Lyme-like illness, unquote, in the American South. That, by the way, is the lone star tick, native to Texas. We've been getting infected with those quite a bit here at the civic and governmental level in the United States in recent years, too, haven't we? Continuing, Carroll's book reveals a shocking disregard for safety in this, a lab handling some of the most dangerous germs on Earth. Eyewitnesses described how infected animals were kept in open-air pens. Birds swooping down into the pens could have picked up and spread infected ticks worldwide. When Polly Murray made her now famous call to the Connecticut Health Department to report the strange epidemic among children and adults in her town, her initial reception was lukewarm. However, some weeks later, she got an unexpected call from a Dr. David Snydman of the Epidemic Intelligence Service, or EIS, who was very interested. He arranged for fellow EIS officer Dr. Alan Steer to get involved. By the time Mrs. Murray turned up for her appointment at Yale, the doctor she had expected to see had been relegated to the role of an onlooker. Alan Steer had taken charge, and his views were to shape the course of Lyme medicine for the next 30 years up till today. To understand the significance of all of this, we need a closer look at the Epidemic Intelligence Service, the EIS. The EIS, the Epidemic Intelligence Service, is an elite quasi-military unit of infectious disease experts set up in the 1950s to develop an offensive biowarfare capability. Despite the banning of offensive biowar in the 1970s, the crack troops of the EIS continue to exist, ostensibly for non-offensive research into emerging disease threats, a blanket phrase covering both bioweapon attacks and natural epidemics at the same time. Graduates of the EIS training program are sent in to occupy strategic positions in the U.S. health infrastructure, taking leadership at federal and state health agencies in academia, industry, and the media. The organization also extends its influence abroad, training officers for public health agencies in Britain, France, the Netherlands, and elsewhere around the world. Again, but let me interrupt here briefly to emphasize what we were just talking about here. This, what is described by Ms. Cook as an elite quasi-military unit of infectious disease experts, basically trains people who are then sent in to occupy strategic positions in the U.S. health infrastructure. It's a very, very interesting organization. They dominate Lyme disease research, but this is not an institution about which one hears a great deal. Certainly, in the modern age in particular, having people in the health establishment who are knowledgeable about and can function in conjunction with any sort of potential biological warfare or bioterror threat, certainly that's an essential component. This is a particularly interesting institution, however, and just exactly why it is so deeply involved with Lyme disease research, which is ostensibly not that big a deal. Well, the disease itself supposedly is not that big a deal. It's not clear from this paper why that's the case, but certainly throughout the course of the investigation into Lyme disease, the possibility of the fact that it's derivative in one way or another, intentionally or otherwise, from biological warfare research is certainly something that needs to be carefully considered. And in any event, at every turn with regard to research into Lyme disease, one finds people involved with such kinds of research. Continuing. In fact, a high proportion of Steerkamp Lyme experts are involved with the EIS. Bear in mind, this is the government's powerful Lyme disease ain't so bad section. Beginning again, in fact, a high proportion of Steerkamp Lyme experts are involved with the EIS. Given that the EIS is a small, elite force, in 2001, the Center for Disease Control revealed that there were less than 2,500 EIS officers in existence since the unit was first created in 1951. So its whole history is 2,500. It seems incredible that so many of America's top infectious disease experts would devote their careers to what they themselves claim is a hard-to-catch, easily-cured, unquote, disease. Within a few years of Steer's discovery, unquote, of Lyme disease, the unique Lyme rash and certain associated symptoms had been recognized in Europe nearly a century before, it was announced that its bacterial cause had been identified. The microbe was accidentally found by biowarfare scientist Willy Burgdorfer and was subsequently named for him. Burgdorfer has championed the Lyme disease patients movement and is not suspected of any wrongdoing. However, it is not impossible that he was unwittingly caught up in a chain of events that were not as random as they might have seemed. Burgdorfer was a Swiss scientist who had been recruited by the U.S. Public Health Service in the 1950s. He was highly experienced with both ticks and Borrelia, but after being told that the government was not interested in funding work with the latter, he switched to work with Rickettsia and other pathogens. In 1981, Burgdorfer was sent a batch of deer ticks by a team studying Rocky Mountain spotted fever on the East Coast. In charge of the team was one Dr. Jorge Benach. Benach subsequently spent much of his career as a Steerkamp Lyme researcher. In 2004, he was chosen as recipient for a $3 million biowarfare research grant. Cutting open some of Benach's ticks, Burgdorfer noticed microfilaria, or microscopic worm young. This was a subject he had been studying recently, only these microfilaria were different. They were exceptionally large, large enough to be seen with the naked eye. His curiosity naturally piqued, he opened up several more ticks. There, he was surprised to find the spiral-shaped germs of Borrelia. Cultivation is necessary in order to isolate bacteria for study so that diagnostic tests, vaccines, or cures can be developed. Borrelia are very difficult to grow in culture. However, by lucky coincidence, unquote, another scientist had recently joined the lab where he worked and had apparently been involved in an amazing breakthrough in this area. So naturally, Burgdorfer handed the infected ticks over to him. That scientist was Dr. Alan Barber, an officer like Steer and Snidman of the Epidemic Intelligence Service with a background in work on anthrax, one of the most terrifying biowarfare agents known. EIS man Barber, therefore, became the first to isolate the prototype organism on which all subsequent Lyme disease blood tests would be based. This is very significant as a huge body of evidence indicates the unreliability of these tests, which are routinely used to rule out the disease. Additionally, all DNA detection of the Lyme agent in ticks and animals is ultimately based directly or indirectly on the genetic profile of the strain first isolated by Barber, again of the Epidemic Intelligence Service. Continuing. Shortly after Barber's discovery, other species and strains of the Lyme-causing bacteria were isolated, especially in Europe. They were all classified based on their resemblance to Barber's organism and have been grouped into a category called Borrelia burgdorferi sensu lato, or BBSL for short. However, a Borrelia was subsequently found in the southern U.S. referred to briefly above, which appears not to be a member of Barber's BBSL group at all. The bacteria, named Borrelia lone stari, often evades detection on Lyme blood tests, is not found using DNA tests, and does not grow in Barber's culture medium, which is used worldwide for lab study. And yet, it appears to cause an illness identical to Lyme, down to the bullseye rash, which, though not present in all patients, is considered unique to Lyme disease. In 2005, Barber, who spent much of his career studying the hard-to-catch, easy-to-cure Lyme disease, was placed in charge of the new multi-million new biowarfare mega-complex based at the University of California at Irvine. Barber is joined there by his close colleague and fellow Steerite Joannis Bounikis, author of recent papers calling for a restrictive approach to Lyme diagnosis. The next section here is called The Spread and the Spin. By the late 1980s, it was realized that Lyme disease was rapidly spreading out of control. Cases were reported across America, Europe, and Asia. Federal health agencies launched a major propaganda effort to limit diagnosis and so artificially contain the epidemic. The National Institute of Health, or NIH, appointed biowarfare expert Edward McSweagan as Lyme program officer. Under his leadership, the diagnostic criteria was skewed to exclude most sufferers, especially those with chronic neurological illness. McSweagan's successor at NIH, Dr. Phil Baker, is an anthrax expert and has continued his policies. The Center for Disease Control is another federal body which has had a major impact on how Lyme is diagnosed and treated. Its influence extends abroad, with European public health departments drawing up policies based on CDC guidelines. It should be remembered that it is the CDC which trains the Epidemic Intelligence Service, and much of the leadership of the CDC has traditionally been drawn from EIS ranks. Therefore, it comes as no surprise to learn that David Dennis, the head of the Vector-Borne Diseases Research Program at CDC, with massive influence over Lyme issues, was involved with the EIS. However, we could legitimately wonder why at lower levels of the CDC hierarchy, EIS officers, the nation's heavyweight infectious disease experts, continue to play such a major role in investigating the supposedly hard-to-catch, easily-cured Lyme. For example, EIS officers Martin Schrieffer and Captain Paul Meade. In 2001, responding to the protest of thousands of patients that standard 2 or 3 week antibiotic courses were not sufficient, the NIH commissioned biowarfare scientist Mark Klempner to study persistence of Lyme infection. ILADS doctors had found that patients left untreated in the early phase often needed long courses of antibiotics, sometimes for years. Klempner, however, concluded that persistent Lyme infection did not exist. In 2003, Klempner was appointed head of the new $1.6 billion biowarfare top security facility being developed at Boston University. Shortly after, the news emerged that there had been an escape of the deadly bug tularemia, which was not properly reported to the authorities. In 2005, the author discovered a document on the NIH website listing Lyme as one of the potential bioterrorism agents studied in BSL-4 top security labs. After this was publicized, the NIH announced that they had made a mistake, unquote, and removed the words Lyme disease from the page. At the time of writing, the original is still available in cached internet archives. However, at around the same time, a CDC source leaked the identical information to the Associated Press. Moreover, the Science Coalition, comprising entities as prestigious as the American Medical Association, Yale University, and the American Red Cross, maintains a website which at the time of writing also lists Lyme as a disease studied for its biowarfare potential. Could these three major organizations all have coincidentally made the same mistake? In 2004, the UK government denied that Lyme was a threat in Britain and told Parliament that no Lyme research had been conducted since 1999. Yet the report of the official UK delegation to an international conference on the prevention of bioterrorism revealed that Lyme was being studied at Porton Down, Britain's top biowarfare facility. Britain and many other European countries take their lead on Lyme from a body called EUCALB, rooted in Steerkamp methodology. NATO has also been directly involved in moves to harmonize European Lyme diagnosis along Steerite lines. Lyme's ability to evade detection on routine medical tests, its myriad presentations which can baffle doctors by mimicking 100 different diseases, its amazing abilities to evade the immune system and antibiotic treatment would make it an attractive choice to bioweaponeers looking for an incapacitating agent. Lyme's abilities as the great imitator, unquote, might mean that an attack could be misinterpreted as simply a rise in the incidence of different, naturally occurring diseases such as autism, MS, lupus, and chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME. Borrelia's inherent ability to swap outer surface proteins, which may also vary widely from strain to strain, would make the production of an effective vaccine extremely difficult. A vaccine developed for the public by the Steer Camp in collaboration with GlaxoSmithKline was pulled from the market a few years ago amid class action lawsuits. Finally, the delay before the appearance of the most incapacitating symptoms would allow plenty of time for an attacker to move away from the scene, as well as preventing people in a contaminated zone from realizing that they had been infected and seeking treatment. Often in the early period, there is no rash, only vague flu-like or other non-specific symptoms, which might be dismissed by GPs or ignored by the patient. The 2003 proposal for a rapid detection method for biowarfare by Dr. J.J. Dunn of Brookhaven National Lab seems to add further grounds for suspicion. It is based on the use of two sentinel germs, plague and Lyme. In 1999, Lyme patient advocacy leader Pat Smith was amazed to find on visiting an Army base at an old biowar testing ground in Maryland that the U.S. Department of Defense has developed a satellite-linked system that enables soldiers to read in real time off a display on their helmet's visor information about the rate of Lyme-infected ticks wherever they may be on Earth. Unit commanders could update the database using state-of-the-art portable PCR machines, which test for Lyme DNA in soldiers bitten by ticks. The use of such cutting-edge technology for a supposedly hard-to-catch, easy-to-cure illness seems odd, to say the least. Lyme is often complicated by the presence of co-infecting diseases in the same tick, e.g. those caused by the microbes of Babesia, Bartonella, and Mycoplasma, believed by some researchers to be the cause of Gulf War illness, Ehrlichia, Microfilaria, and encephalitis viruses. Investigations into some of these, too, have been led by American biowarfare experts. It could be argued that some of these Lyme researchers have been awarded biowar-related grants simply because they are infectious disease specialists, which is a natural terrain from which to recruit. After all, research budgets for biowar have ballooned massively since the anthrax attacks of 2001. There is a demand for large numbers of personnel to work on such projects. Well, there are two things that could be said here. First, researchers who have spent much or most of their careers studying a hard-to-catch, easily-cured disease would not appear to be the best choice as recipients of this type of grant, unless the easily-cured disease had some relation to biowarfare. Second, while some infectious disease specialists began to study the organisms for the first time after 2001, this is not necessarily the case with the Steerites. That's all we have time for right now, and I will put up the rest of this paper in the description for the broadcast. That will be available at www.spitfirelist.com. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program number 585, Lyme Disease and Biological Warfare Research. This has been recorded on February 11th of the year 2007. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.